call is now recorded. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. This is the IRTPB call on the 6th of April. On the call, we have Bodwan Shombe, Michele Nilon, Barbara Steele, Mikey O'Connor, Chris Chaplow, Matt Mansell, James Bladell, Michael Collins, Barry Cobb, and Matt Serlin has just joined. And for staff, we have Margie Milam, David Geezer, and Glenda Saint-Jerry, myself. Thank you, Michele. Over to you.
All right, thank you. Do we have any apologies?
We have apologies from Kevin Herdman.
Okay.
And Paul Diaz has just joined.
So should I give out to Paul Diaz for being bold?
No, we won't. We'll be nice to him.
All right, good afternoon, everybody.
Since James is in an airport, I think we'll let him give that very brief update very quickly now. So, James, if you could take yourself off mute, please.
Hi, Michele. Can you hear me all right?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. So just an update from the sub-team on the transfer reverse process. We were able to get some very valuable feedback from other registries, and ICANN policy and legal counsel as well. I thought that was very good. I consolidated that into some sort of an organized list that we can present to the sub-team and then clean up the draft proposal and then get that to this working group for review. So the plan at this point is that the working group is attempting to meet on Thursday. This is the sub-team. And then we will clean up that document, incorporate the comments and feedback, and then present that to the group 1 week from today on April 13th.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody have any questions or comments or anything else on this?
And for those, this is James again. And for those who weren't paying attention or didn't see it in the press industry, there was a couple of very high profile hijackings over the holiday weekend, domain name hijackings, and I think that's if nothing else, has really served as a timely reminder that this process is sorely needed in the community.
Anybody have any other comments on this? No? Okay. I see that Matt Mansell has joined us today. Matt, are you on the call?
I am, and apologies that there was no apology last week.
That's okay. It'll be duly noted, and next time I see you, you shall be horsewhipped. Don't worry. So, everybody, Matt, I presume that most of the registrars know Matt, and I presume some of the others might know Matt. Matt, would you care to introduce yourself very briefly?
Yeah, of course. I'm Matt Mansell from Mesh Digital, DomainMonster.com. This is the first real ICANN PGP I've been involved in, so apologies if I'm a little slow to catch up with it. I spent some time reading all the documentation, but I'm sure I'm miles behind still, but trying my best.
Okay. Thanks, Matt. Okay, then. You all had a small little bit of, dare I say it, homework, which was to have a look at the initial report that Marika had drafted up some time ago, well, back in February, I think it was. Have any of you had a chance to have a look at it? Rather than asking, have you all looked at it? So I'm sure you haven't.
Yes.
Yes.
Great! At least two people have. Woohoo! Mikey, have you had a chance to look at this?
I am ashamed to admit that having asked for it, the time to do it, I did not. I've been a little distracted with DI. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Somebody had to take a bullet, and you took the bullet for VI, so
we'll
let you off.
Yeah, just
blame who?
Blame Mikey.
Well, we're going to anyway. Don't worry about that. Yeah, you should know by now that you're always going to be blamed. Okay, has anybody had a chance? So, those of you who have had a chance to read over it, do you have any initial thoughts or comments?
Chris here. My thoughts with the working group deliberations in Section 5, it's a lot better than I could have done picking it out of all those conversations. Thanks.
Okay. So Marika did a wonderful job, is what you're saying?
In a word, yes.
Okay. She's not here this week, so we'll have to remind her next week. Anybody else have any other thoughts on this?
This is very just stating the obvious that we definitely need to fill in the blanks for what our proposed recommendations are going to be and start developing, you know, rough drafts or bullet point straw men of what those are going to start to look like.
Okay. Very good. Michael Collins?
I bet he's on mute. Hey, Michael, I think you're on mute.
Michael, are you there?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah,
hello?
Now we can hear you. Yep, that's good.
Oh, darn, I think my unmute didn't work the first time. I apologize. I wasted a lot of time because really I was just going to comment that I was going to say pretty much the same thing as the gentleman before. I apologize. I've already forgot his name.
Okay.
We need to work on our conclusions. Thank you.
Okay. Conclusions are the thing you want to look at. Okay. Okay. Does anybody have any major issues with anything that Marika has put in the document to date? I'll take that silence to mean no, okay? Margie, what's the exact process here with moving this forward if people don't have any massive issues with it and just want to look at conclusions? What's the next step?
I guess I haven't been too involved in this group. I assume you have to pick the particular topic that you want to reach a conclusion on and either have a subgroup work on it or, you know, just break it down by issue. And then Marika can update the report, you know, as you guys reach conclusions.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, then. So how about we take it on an issue-by-issue basis? And then work our way through it. Now, one of the issues is being dealt with by a subgroup already in terms of the fast, rapid, what are we calling it at the moment? Mikey, what are we calling it? The rapid return, the fast return, the quick return? Do we have a name?
Transfer Restore.
Oh, Transfer Restore. Thank you. I knew we'd given it a wonderful name, but I couldn't remember what it was. Okay, so that's dealing with one of the issues, I believe. That's for issue A.
Right.
Is that correct? Right?
Yeah. That's right.
Is there anything else in issue A that we need to deal with?
This is Mikey.
Yes.
I think that, and I have to think about this a bit, but one of the things we probably want to take a look at is what's inside and outside of the transfer restore process. My recollection is that that's a fairly narrowly framed process, and there may be some activities outside of the boundaries of that we'll want to also take a look at. But the one that comes to mind is, I think, inside transfer restore, we don't talk much about the complaint process, the ICANN complaint process, as an escalation mechanism. And we may want to include a discussion of that in this broader topic. So I think the only thing that I'd caution us on is that there may be some things that fall outside of transfer restore that we need to address in this broader issue.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else within issue A? No? Okay.
Right, issue B, with additional provisions on undoing inappropriate transfers of needs, especially with regards to disputes between a registrant and admin contact. The policy is clear that the registrant can overrule the AC, but how this is implemented is currently at the discretion of the registrar. Now, we've discussed this quite a bit. Is there any lack of clarity or misunderstanding or anything in relation to this issue? Are we happy enough with what this issue covers? So we've been talking about it for months. Okay, Michael Collins and then James.
I think that we've talked about it a lot, but I'm not happy with the progress. I think we've acknowledged the problem and stated obstacles to solving the problem, but we haven't really offered any solutions. We should suggest to any and all groups reviewing WHOIS service to consider using IRIS or some equivalent method to securely provide registrant email contact info to gaining registrars, I think. And we should probably include in our conclusion that we hope to, that as a part of any future changes to WHOIS service, a method will be provided to enable registrant information to go to gaining registrars. I think we talk about it, but we don't really offer it as a recommendation. And that's all.
Okay, thank you. James?
Yes, quickly on issue B, I wanted to point out that, and perhaps give a little bit of a sneak preview of the draft proposal for issue A, is that the envisioned transfer reversal process that we've drafted up would only be available to the registrant and not the admin contact. So while both the registrant and the admin contact can initiate the transfer, only the registrant could reverse the transfer. And I think that we may have, whether we set out to do that or not, I think that we have possibly created a mechanism that addresses this problem.
Okay. Thank you.
Actually, James, if I might interrupt, I think that is the problem rather than a solution to the problem.
James?
I didn't understand that, Michael.
I think that is the problem, that the admin can initiate it and that the registrant can reverse it. I think that is the problem rather than a solution to the problem.
Well, this new procedure that we're, you know, kind of cobbling together as a sub-team, Michael, would formalize that, would provide a standard or uniform mechanism to reverse transfers where the registrant disagreed with the transfer versus the admin contact. So I think the answer is, in this, you know, should this go through under this new mechanism, you know, the erroneous transfers would still occur, but the registrant would have the ability to reverse them.
Yeah, that's what I see as a problem.
Okay, so you see as the problem is that it's a diminishment of the administrative contact's ability to transfer and then keep it transferred?
No, I keep in mind my background on it a little bit. I apologize, but it is a focus. That if someone has the ability to transfer a domain name, that's often used as an evidence of ownership. And because we don't really have anything else today as evidence of ownership. It's really difficult as a broker or as a buyer of a domain name. Sorry about my dog. Here's one something. But if the admin can transfer it and then a financial exchange takes place and then it can be reversed, I think that's a real problem.
Well, in that case, so
I would like to see the admin not be able to transfer the domain name at all or to have it be authoritative, I suppose. Or at least work towards that, at least in the recommendation that I had, that, you know, if we can't do it today, that we should at least recommend it to future WHOIS groups that IRIS or something be done in future improvements to WHOIS, that this situation, this problem at least be considered then, if we can't solve it today.
I think we're talking about possibly two different problems, Michael, which is why I wasn't understanding you earlier. and probably why I was probably sounding a little more confusing. I think the issue that I think we're trying to cover under this procedure for issue A was one where, for example, a registrant would hire out with a web hosting firm, and then the web hosting firm would try and retain control of the registration. I don't like to use the word ownership, but control of the registration after some sort of a commercial relationship had ended, whether, you know, an employee was let go or whether a development contract ended. And then there was, you know, kind of this dispute ongoing of, you know, how to resolve those types of things. So I think by clearly defining that, you know, where transfer authority and reversal authority lives, I thought we were trying to address something like that. But I see that there's a queue building up behind me, so I'll stop talking about it now.
Maybe it might be something which we could follow up on the list in a bit more detail.
Well, I think we need to describe the problems a little bit better, McKelly, because I wasn't understanding.
This is what I mean, is that it might be helpful if Michael could post to the list a detail of the problem he perceives. And you can post as well what you perceive as being a problem. Might make it that little bit clearer. Mikey and then Paul, please.
This is Mikey. Actually, I was about to take my hand down because I think that, indeed, these are two different problems. So James's last little bit, I think, is on the right track. I think that the issue that Michael is raising is a separate issue from the one that we're addressing with the transfer return. And I think really what one is sort of a procedural, almost technical conversation, and the other is really a deep conversation about who has authority. You know, the point that Michael is raising, I think, is who has what kind of authority over transferring a name, and that definition, while clear in policy, is not clear in implementation. So, you know, I think we're on the right track. I agree. A conversation on the list would be a good idea, and then try and get to a resolution on this. But I think they are quite different.
Okay, Paul, Chris, then Michael. Or Michael, do you want to come back on anything Mikey's saying now? Well, let's give you that.
No, in order. Thank you.
Okay, no problem. Paul?
Yeah, thanks, McKaylee. Michael, I recognize this issue. You brought it up in IRTPA as well, the whole question about admin versus registrant. And just for the record, I think it's a great idea to have a discussion on the list. So that, you know, we can flesh out and perhaps provide a little history for people who may not have been part of the A group, what the concerns are. I certainly will weigh in and just remind everybody right now that there's also the unintended consequence here. We are, all registrars are required to publish the admin contact email. You know, if we go ahead and make a recommendation to change who has priority there, you could be creating the unintended consequence of a major security problem, in that, you know, you would now have that information, whereas the registrant email contact is not a required field. Registrars like that because that provides a bit of security if there's a conflict or a dispute over a transfer. Haven't necessarily thought through all the way, you know, recommending that admin no longer has any authority to initiate a transfer. It's certainly one possibility. I'm not sure IRIS or any other system is necessarily the silver bullet here. There are certainly implementation questions, concerns about IRIS. It's not anything that would happen in the near term, even in ICANN time. That's something that is well off into the future. So it'd be great to have a debate, but I just, you know, kind of sensitize everybody, remind everybody that this is a tricky one, and it will require a lot of thinking through. Good debate to have, but I agree. I think let's keep transfer restore focused on the narrow little slice that we were trying to have it address, this much more fundamental question about admin versus registrant authorities, and how to make sure that you don't have these unintended consequences or these problems after certain transactions. A good debate to have. Let's kick it off on the list.
Okay, thank you. Chris?
Yeah, although by now it might be stating the obvious, but I like to sort of categorize things in my own mind. So here we're talking of two different problems and the confusion between them. One, where the registrant and the admin contact are in unison, as it were, and the other, where the two parties are in dispute. I wonder, perhaps some of the registrars who've dealt with some of these hijack problems might be able to enlighten us if that's easy to detect. Is it easy to categorize one or the other straight away, or is it a bit of a mix-up?
Anybody? Paul?
Yeah, just following up, Chris. When you say in unison the two, do you mean that the same entity, the same person, is both admin and registrant? I wouldn't see the conflict. Or do you mean unison in that they both agree, which, again, why would there be a conflict?
This is Mikey. Just let me take a crack at clarifying. I think what Chris is getting at is, let's say that there's one situation where a domain has been transferred where both the admin contact and the registrant agree that that's a bad thing. And another situation where a domain has been transferred and they disagree. And I think that what this particular issue is talking about is when they disagree. When they agree that the transfer away is a bad thing, then this issue is kind of moot.
Okay, can I follow up?
Please do.
Okay, thanks, Mikhail. It's Paul again. Look, when they both agree, it's very simple for the, in this case, the losing registrar, the original registrar, to work with them to get it, because fundamentally the case was it's a case of hijacking. In the instance where there's a disagreement between registrant and admin, we're back to Michael's original concern or question. Registrant will overrule, and at least my registrant network solutions will work with the registrant as the ultimate authority with the name. And we don't try to insert ourselves arbitrating or adjudicating a dispute between the admin and the registrant. We will work with the registrant as policy ICANN rules currently, as they currently exist.
Michael?
I'm not sure I have anything else to say. There's been enough, except just as a reminder. Except just as a reminder that not only are there legitimate sales of domain names, but there's also illegitimate sales, and quite often the financial motive behind hijackings are to sell a domain name in the marketplace, and so there's victims on both sides, and it would be really good if we could reduce the hijackings and reduce this problem. But also we have no real way. It's a very difficult thing to know who has the right to sell something in this space, and I was just trying to make it a little more secure on both sides. That's all.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else have any comments on this? Okay, then. I would suggest then that we could try and thrash out some of these matters on the mailing list so that people have an opportunity to provide, examples of what they're talking about, so we can actually see what people are talking about, rather than just kind of, oh, I like this idea. What the hell? Sorry, the screen's all doing weird things. Margie, what are you doing to me?
Sorry, I goofed. I'll pull it back up.
Okay, anyway, moving on.
Okay, so issue C, which is in relation to whether special provisions are needed for a change of registrant near a change of registrar. The policy does not currently deal with change of registrant, which often figures in hijacking cases. So anybody have any further comments on this? Okay, okay, Michael Collins.
I guess I was going to ask James if he's still here, because I thought James might have some perspective on how this is received by the customers and how well it functions. Because I think it's a good idea to reduce hijackings, and I think this is a tool that may be used very well to reduce hijackings by some registrars already. And again, anything that we can do to make these domains more secure is probably a good thing, provided it doesn't. That the unintended negative consequences aren't too great, and he may have more experience on what we can do to minimize those unintended consequences.
Hi, this is James. We famously or infamously do have an opt-in 60-day lock for changes of registrant that prevents a name from transferring. Feel like, from talking to our domain services folks, we feel that that's a very effective tool against hijacking. I think that the more sophisticated attacks will probably learn what our procedures are and learn, other ways around them, like finding other weak links in the system, whether it's something like a public email account like Gmail or Yahoo or something like that. They'll go and look for something else. But I think that we've seen it both ways. I think that, for when it works and when it prevents an attempted hijacking, I think that that's probably quietly happening in this, behind the scenes all the time. I think that if it gets any attention at all, it's attention for introducing delay in a commercial transaction between, two domain registrants. So I think that that's probably why it's become more of a lightning rod than there's not going to be any tick or tape parades for this policy. But I think it does good work.
Okay, Mass.
Yeah, I'll sort of agree and disagree with James. I mean, I'm all for measures to limit the amount of domain hijackings we have, but our experience has been that's a pretty broad brushstroke in which to apply a policy that, to James's point, I think there's lots of ways that people find ways around that. And our experience has been, and James kind of alluded to this, that, it does introduce delays when you have a party that's buying a domain from another party or, has won a UDRP decision and transfers, and updates the ownership and then has to wait another 60 days. And so I'm actually not a fan of that becoming a policy that every registrar would have to implement. I think it's way too broad of a policy to address a very specific issue.
Okay. James, and then Matt?
Yeah, just to respond, I think Matt's correct. I don't think that we would hold up a UDRP decision for this, Matt, but I'd have to check on that. I just want to emphasize once again that we very clearly state on our website that if your intention is, by changing this registrar, if your intention is to move it to another registrar, we ask that you reverse that sequence, move it first, and then change the registrar at the new registrar. So we're essentially saying, reverse the process or the sequence from changing the contact information versus changing the registrar. Why not transfer it first and then change the registrar? Because the transfer itself is not a trade, if you will. So I think that that's an important distinction. A lot of folks view a transfer as a trade. A lot of folks view the change of registrant as a trade. We're trying to give folks a recipe, since this is not defined, trying to give folks a recipe on how to how to conduct that seamlessly without encountering a lock if it's a legitimate transaction.
Okay, Matt Mansell?
I think the point that James made, is simply the fact that the change of registrant is a very good indicator of fraud. So wouldn't a solution be, or is it a workable solution, I don't know, that the when the transfer takes place or when the transfer is notified to the new registrar, if there's been a change of registrar within a period of time, the new registrar is notified of that in some way so that it can be dealt with accordingly.
Change registrant, registrant you mean, is it?
Registrant, yeah, sorry.
Okay.
So to provide that information forward, for want of better words.
And how would you do that?
That's what I don't know.
Okay. American Matt?
American Matt, wow.
I could have original Matt and new Matt. I could have American Matt and English Matt. I could just have English Matt, or I could have younger Matt and older Matt. I mean, guys, you choose. I don't mind.
As long as I'm the younger.
Yeah.
Well, either that or else you're really going heavy on the oil of Ole.
Thanks, Michele. Yeah, I don't want to spend too much time in this, but just to pick up on what James said, I mean, our experience with GoDaddy, frankly, is really not at all coloring my opinion on this. I mean, actually, they're great to work with on this. My fear, frankly, is when you expose it to the entire registrar community and you've got registrars that we already know are unresponsive dealing with other things, that this is just going to become one more thing that's a hurdle that people have to try to, contact customer service that, frankly, isn't as reachable as the folks at GoDaddy and things like that. So just to be clear, I'm actually we work really well with GoDaddy, and when issues come up, we resolve them. That's not at all my concern. My concern is this becoming policy that every registrar has to deal with, and now registrants are trying to track down customer service folks for registrars that we know are difficult to get in touch with.
Just one thing, Matt. If you were to take the unresponsive, slow-to-act registrar out of the equation, would you have any issue with the concept?
Just on the face of it, I still would. I mean, I think it would... maybe there's another step in the process that you can do to validate. But, we do a lot of, a lot of our clients go through corporate mergers and acquisitions and things like that. So for legal reasons, they're having to update the registrant of a domain name, and then to, have to keep a name at that registrar for another 60 days potentially creates, problems. And James is right. Transfer the name, then do the registrant change. So there are ways to work around that. But I just don't know that that changing the entire, that adding such a time constraint, another 60 days after a registrant change before you can do a registrar transfer, I'm hesitant to say that that's a good idea. A and B, that it's really gonna prevent a lot of hijackings that we see.
Chris, you had your hand up, I think.
Must be left up from before. Sorry.
Okay, never mind. All right, that's okay. James, then Mikey.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up and agree with Matt, Western Matt, Idaho Matt, that that is the problem. Is not only slow responsive to, but non-responsive registrars. And I think that we also have to bear in mind that when we're talking about hijacking, we're talking about a name, a website, possibly a revenue-generating website that is just offline and out of commission. So, the damages could be measured in minutes or hours. So, even a slow-responding registrar, to your point, Michele, is not acceptable. And I think it's that fear, that we would lose control to one of those types of registrars, not to Paul's organization or Michele's organization or Matt's organization or the other Matt's organization, but that we would lose track of them to a very small or non-responsive organization that, and it's that concern and that desire to protect our customers that wants us to slow down this process just a little bit. It's possible that if we had at our disposal a mechanism that could yank that name back in a short period of time, this might obsolete this practice. I don't want to say that, you know, I don't want to commit to that because obviously we're just theorizing at this point, but it's possible that if we had something like that in our bag of tricks, we wouldn't be that concerned about, you know, assuming that something is a hijacking first and then proceeding accordingly.
Okay, Mikey, and then Michael Collins.
This is Mikey. I think that we're all kind of in agreement in a way. I think we're all saying that that event when a registrant and a registrar change close together, that event is special sometimes. A lot of times it's not, for all the reasons that have been stated, but sometimes it is. And I think that's all that this issue is really trying to get at. I'm not sure that we've gotten to the point of specifying a particular solution, and in a way I think the 60-day hold might have been a little bit of a distraction. And that as I reread the report, actually read the report, it's probably a better way to say it, we might want to sheer away from that particular example in favor of some other examples as a way to shape our conversation. Because I think we're all interested in the same thing, which is making it easy for people to do the normal course of business, but make it hard for bad guys to steal domains and hide by quickly shifting to an unresponsive registrar.
Anybody have any comeback on Mikey, or should I move to Michael Collins? Michael Collins?
I withdraw my request to speak, thank you.
Okay. Matt Mansell? We call you Young Matt, I think.
I'm happy with that. I think, you know, obviously I'm new to this report, but the question is, you know, whether special provisions are needed for a change of registrant near a change of registrar. And I, you know, I'm speaking you know, second to Mikey. I think absolutely everybody seems to be, could be wrong, everybody seems to be in agreement that actually it is a special circumstance. So it's now more a case of working out, you know, what can we do to deal with that circumstance. I don't think anyone here is disputing it isn't a special circumstance. Are they? And if they are, then I think they should speak up and let's hear the other side to it.
Okay, thank you, Matt.
This is Mikey. I just want to highlight something that James put into the chat because I think, in fact, he's on to something.
Okay,
we really have two big events. We have a hijack and a sale. And one of those events is not benign, and one of them is. And what we want to do is make the benign ones easy and the not benign ones hard. And if there's a way to do that, then I think we're on to something. So I just wanted to pull that up into the transcript.
So how many, does anybody know how many of the hijacks or kind of high-profile domains that we've seen over the last year or so have not led to sales almost immediately? I mean, how many of them were just hijacks just for, you know, laughs and giggles?
Well, some, Michele, this is James speaking. I think that there are some notorious cases where they are pointed to a defamatory site or the traffic is redirected. I've never seen a hijack result in a fish, but I suppose that's possible. And in other cases, it is, you know, it's attempted to, if it's a generic word or something of high value to the domaining community, then it's, you know, it's almost immediately offered for sale. But I think that that community is getting, you know, developing a sense of, you know, suspicion when something looks too good to be true. Kind of like the guy in the got the very expensive stereo system in the back trunk of his car and he's selling it for a tenth of what it would be retail.
Okay. Michael Collins?
Thanks.
Oh, you were there for a minute, Michael, and then I think you muted yourself.
Darn it, I hit the button the wrong way. Thank you. Well, that was distracting. I think that Oh, I forgot where I was going with this. Darn it.
Would you like me to come back to you in a minute?
Yeah, forget it. Thanks.
Okay, I mean, you can always, anyway, look, guys, if any of you have any thoughts that you kind of lose in the moment, you can always come back or post it to the list. Matt Serlin.
Thanks, Michele. I just want to kind of pick up on something that the other, I guess the younger Matt, which I'm in a little bit of denial of, but anyway.
Well, we can just say younger Lemon if you wish. You could be the older Lemon.
What the other Matt brought up, and maybe we need to, maybe we need to actually look at some data, but I'm not of the opinion that registrar transfers and registrant transfers are special events. And Matt, I apologize if I misunderstood or put words in your mouth, but I thought that's what I heard you say, is that those are, that is a special case. Well, from my standpoint, I don't necessarily think that is the case, at least in our, the clients that we're dealing with, that oftentimes we are doing registrant and registrar transfers together. So, and again, without looking at data to actually back that up, it's just everyone's individual experience, but my individual experience would be that's not such a special case for us anyway.
Okay, James, and then Matt Mansell, then Michael Collins. James?
Yeah, just responding to Mr. Serlin, I'll dispense with the Matts here for simplicity, but that's an interesting point. I would even point out that, or even just kind of float out the idea that they're not a special case. They are completely undefined by policies. If you look at country codes, for example, that have functions like a trade that's done at the registry level, that's a completely different animal than anything that we have cobbled together with registrant changes and IRTP. So I think that's something, worth considering, is the possibility that, it's not special. It's just it's like dividing by zero. And there's just no definition for it at all.
Okay. Matt Mansell and then Michael Collins.
Yeah, I guess just worth clarifying for the other Matt. I guess probably a better use of my language is a special indicator rather than necessarily a special case. I completely agree that it's not uncommon for registrant changes to happen near a registrar transfer. But I do certainly believe, and I guess I was putting that question out to the group, is it's a special indicator that could be used in one way, shape or form for the outgoing or the incoming registrar. And I'm not sure what that use is, but I think it is definitely a special indicator.
Okay. Michael Collins?
I wanted to say that I think that the domainer community is getting a little wiser as a group, not all individuals, but that it would be handy for them to have as many tools as they can to make these analyzations, because I don't think that there are very many domainers that want to buy hijacked domain names. And one of the things I think that would help is this policy may encourage the very action that I think James suggested, where the registrant change would occur after a registrar transfer. And if this policy did influence that, I think that would be positive, because one of the things that we would have is, as a buyer of a domain name, is you would be able to look and see who the registrant is, and hopefully the contact information would be not the hijacker, but the actual owner, and that would give you an opportunity to confirm whether you're dealing with a hijacker or an owner. But once a registrant change occurs, and then you're dealing with, you're dealing with a hijacker, but the contact information may not yield as much value. And so I think there is some value to pushing people into the registrant change first, before the registrar change, possibly. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else have anything further on this to say at the moment? James?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, Michael, you mentioned changing the registrant first and then executing the transfer. Do you believe there should be an artificial delay or cooling off period in between those, or do you believe that those can happen in, right on top of each other?
I really am not sure I have
the
experience.
I'm
not sure that I have the experience. It's one of the reasons I asked you, James, what your experience was. I know there's been some complaints
certainly I've read about people that weren't happy with it, but I wonder if it was effective enough to outweigh those complaints. I just wasn't sure.
And Paul Diaz has just posted a link to an article on Domain Name Wire, which is giving you 8 clues that a domain name is stolen. This, I think, is written primarily from the perspective of domain investors. It's not a bad starting point. Don't agree with all of the points on there, but that's just me being biased. Okay, then. I think there's been a fair amount of discussion, and there's a certain amount of agreement and a certain amount of healthy disagreement on this one. So maybe if Matt Mansell, since you're new to the group, if you could possibly post the list and an overview of what you think we should do here, it would be helpful.
Will do.
This is Michele just picking on you, Matt.
Noted.
That's okay. Right, next one. Issue D. Whether standards or best practices should be implemented regarding use of registrar lock status when it should not be applied. Now, if you remember, this was when we had all this discussion of the RFCs, and we had Barbara's colleague spoke to us a bit explaining about the various lock statuses and everything else. Does anybody have any strong feelings about this, about issue D, beyond what's already covered in the document? No thoughts? And yes, Matt, it is an impossible task, and yes, that was intentional. This is Michele, this is my own view. My only thought about registrar lock statuses is I abhor internal locks that cannot be viewed by third parties using Whois. I find that very, very annoying, and it causes lots of headaches. So if you're going to put a lock on a domain for whatever reason, then it should be flagged in Whois so the rest of us don't waste loads of time with it. That's just my own thoughts. Anybody else have any? Mikey has his hands up. Mikey. Sorry, I missed you there.
No worries. This is Mikey. I think we probably do want to come up with some sort of recommendation here. The bottom of the second to last paragraph is sort of the standardizing of locks. And I think that was a lot of what we were talking about with the fellow from VeriSign. About all these different lock statuses and the human interpretable versions and all that. So I think a recommendation along those lines wouldn't be a bad idea. I wouldn't want to just leave this one without speaking at all.
Okay. Does anybody apart from Mikey have any thoughts on this? No? Okay. Issue E, whether and if so, how best to clarify denial reason number 7. A domain name was already in lock status, provided that the registrar provides a readily accessible and reasonable means for the registered name holder to remove the lock status. So we haven't really come up with any conclusions on this. One of the points that's in the notes here is that we really haven't come up with definitions of readily and reasonable because they're a bit open to interpretation. And I believe David Geezer gave a few thoughts on this previously, Dave, didn't you?
That's right, Michele, I did. Although, quite honestly, I can't recall at the moment precisely where those thoughts were leading other than to take it upon, maybe a sub-team here to work on those definitions and then come back to the group with, some potential language to consider.
Okay, thank you. I suppose the other thing as well, of course, is if we're looking at the complaints that David and his team gave us, how many times does the lock, the ability to remove a lock, appear as a complaint of something which we could look at. Now, I think that was all of our issues, wasn't it? Yeah, it is. So what I would suggest, if we could, is for next week, if people could take the time, those of you who haven't done so already, please go over the initial thing here. And if you have any thoughts or any ideas, please share them with the list. And then we can see about trying to actually come up with a plan of action to try and move this forward. Does anybody have any other queries or issues they wish to raise? No? You've all gone deadly silent? Okay. If that's the case, then I'll call it a day and I'll speak to you all next week.
Thanks, McKinley.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, McKinley.
See you next week.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye now.